Damn, but now.
Like a spreading cancer. A distinctly human error.
Signal is stable. This frequency will continue to remain open.
Life is easy, and I have great faith in you, son. I know you can do it.
The bioelectric, thermal, and kinetic energies of the human body.
The once great human race.
Everyone, welcome to the September 7th edition of the In the Now show. I'm your host, Slip Mode, along with
VR in the house.
My sidekick, VR. Awesome. All right. Well, we got a good show for you this evening, and we're going to head straight into it. Got a lot of interesting stories as usual, and of course, we have our SCO area, which is getting smaller, which that's good because I'm starting to feel like it's wasting my time talking about it because it's so pathetic. But, all right, on some interesting things, I read this one article about a few students over at MIT that basically made a small robot that walks on water. They call it the RoboStrider. Researchers report on August 7th in an issue of Nature that they now understand how insects known as water striders skim effortlessly across the surface of ponds and oceans. In addition, the researchers created RoboStrider, a mechanical water strider that uses the same fluid dynamics to move, although not as graceful and quickly as its natural counterpart. Using mathematics, high-speed photography, and a variety of flow visualization techniques, Bush Mathematics graduate student David L. Hu and mechanical engineering graduate student Brian Chen uncovered the true way in which water striders walk on water. As the insect rests on the surface, the tips of the thin legs create minuscule valleys. It sculls the middle set of its three pairs of legs like oars, causing the water behind those legs to propel it forward as the surface of the valley rebounds like a trampoline. Although the rowing motion does create tiny waves, the waves do not play a significant role in the momentum transfer necessary for propulsion, the researcher wrote. The momentum transfer is primarily in the form of subsurface vortices. So they basically figured out how it worked and got it going. What I'm surprised is that they actually got something made out of, you know, usually, I guess, I don't know what material they used and didn't say, but...
Yeah, it was actually...
I thought it'd be too heavy to...
Yeah, it was a soda can, stainless steel wire.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. Well, that's right. It did say that. But yeah, that means soda can still pretty heavy.
Well, the one that the water strider that lives in China is like 20 centimeters long. The thing's huge, and so if it can hold this, but also as the bigger that they get, proportionally the legs get longer as well, and so it's a whole distribution of weight principle. And so it's still essentially exerting the same amount of force as it's sculling on the water, but it's just bigger. And so it sculls on more water as it's bigger.
That's actually the Vietnamese water strider.
Oh, sorry. All right.
But it's all in the general vicinity.
Of course, you have the paper in front of you.
Yes, yes. So that's pretty cool. I mean, we've read a lot about robotics, and I guess I heard they're coming out with a new Aibo, which is, I think it's Sony, their maker of robotic dog. And so there's always interesting things coming out.
Well, what's really neat about that is that we're still finding principle, you know, things that animals do in nature or just nature in general that we don't understand what's going on. And also at the rate as we're losing species, our understanding or little clues into the inside of physics that we don't understand yet are also disappearing. So this really kind of strange almost catch-22 is here we have the ability to see, you know, the intricacies of physics and how the universe interacts with itself, but yet we're destroying it before we can even understand it.
Well, in some sense, yeah. I mean, they're not every, you know, just not species being extinct every day, or maybe I'm wrong, but...
Oh,
I mean,
yeah, there's like 20 or so every day.
Every day?
Yeah, well, it's...
There must be a heck of a lot of species out there.
Oh, there's millions. And also, I was reading a book a while back on... the author kind of illustrated that there's this really neat principle that... that there's a proportion between land area and speciation. So if you took that and you took the numbers all the way up from all the different continents and islands and all that up to the world level, and it was almost a one-to-one ratio. And so if we use, and we've already used about 95% of all the usable land in the world, and we, through his numbers and his findings, found that the more land that we use, the greater the rate of extinction.
And so, oh, yeah.
So what that kind of entailed, that we've already used 95% of the land that's usable or has species on it, because I'm not counting Antarctica and a few other regions. And so that what we're doing is... that we still have a lot of species, even though we've used 95% of the land, that we just in this, you know, lag time of extinction for 95% of the species, which is kind of sad.
Huh. Yeah. I always see stuff on like Discovery Channel, and they're talking about a new species that you know, this guy particularly covered it, no one else did, and I was like, oh, you know, and it's something I've known about for like many years. They may say like, you know, for instance, like a walrus or something like that, and you know, they'll say they discovered all these things, and this is the first person to really document, you know, spend a few months with this, you know, animal, and I was like, oh, you know, I've heard about walruses forever, you know, and you know, but they're still, you know, studying a walrus or, you know, all sorts of different things. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, because they have a lot of different behaviors, and as the environment changes, and as their we'll find that their breeding territories will actually change and shift due to external factors, and we have a cause in some of that. And that's why they're getting smaller and smaller and smaller, but they're also moving from other places. We'll start finding that there'll be other places where other animals have actually moved their breeding territories or their nesting grounds or whatnot, and due to you know, environmental factors.
Yeah.
But I had a thought there, but it's gone now.
All right. Moving on to our next story. I didn't know that this was even happening, but Microsoft Corp was actually in a private lawsuit with BE Inc., which used to make BOS.
Well, wasn't that kind of smelly?
I was waiting for that. Basically, they had an antitrust lawsuit. I'll just read it right here. Microsoft Corp today, which was back on September 5th, announced that the parties have reached a mutual acceptable mediated agreement on an antitrust lawsuit that they filed with filed by BE Inc. in February of 2002, which is currently pending in the United States court, for District of Maryland of Baltimore, yada, yada, yada. Basically, BEOS, or BE Inc., was rewarded $23,250,000 to end further litigation. Microsoft admits no wrongdoing, but they certainly had to pay for some reason. So that's pretty interesting. What was the last one? We had the last one we talked about. It was a few million dollars for, you know, this one company that enabled you to run applications inside the Internet Explorer browser. And that's awfully a lot of money that has been paid out by Microsoft to these people, but it seems like, you know, it's no big deal to them. I mean, it probably isn't a big deal. I mean, of course, they don't want to do it, but deep pockets, very deep pockets.
Well, and the neat thing about being a corporation is you can kind of send some of your losses off into the future, because you can predict that you can essentially justify that you're going to make a lot more, you know, make money in the future. So you're not taking all of that loss right now. It's kind of like taking a loan on loss.
Yeah, I don't know if they pay in a lump sum or they send, you know.
Well, they can take a loan out to pay off that
debt.
Fine, that debt, and then they can disperse that off for however long anybody will give them a loan for.
Huh. Yeah, 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 I thought that. But
and that's probably a good 50-100-year loan right there.
Yeah.
Just think about it. You're, like, buy a home for, you know, $150,000, $200,000. It's a 30-year mortgage. So if you're a corporation, which doesn't even really have a definite lifespan, you could foreseeably have loans that cover, you know, hundreds of years.
See, what I think with that really that article shows, and it wasn't pointed out in there, that maybe it's a separate article that would be written, but basically I think it shows that, you know, Microsoft can do something, get away with it, maybe not get away with it. Either way, they're going to pay it off, and they still got away with it. I mean, BEOS is no longer in business, and, you know, Microsoft's still around, and, you know, they had to hand out a few bucks here and there, but, you know, they're still doing their thing. And
well, and us, well, the end user will pay for it in any way. So they'll just up their prices in the long run.
Well, I think the end user's been paying for it before they even had any lawsuits with the amount of, you know, cash that they charge per license agreement. I think that the end user's been doing that far beyond in preparation for whatever needs, corporate expansion, world domination, you know, whatever.
Oh, yeah. World control. It's all good.
You know, another thing that...
except Europe is having a little uprising, and we talked about that, I do believe, two shows ago.
Which portion, I mean?
Oh, that there's, was it a couple of countries are not going... Were they not going to use Microsoft?
I think it was Germany.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. And actually, I've got another story that's kind of related to that coming up.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow, I can transition when I don't even know what's going on.
Hey, the let's see. Well, we recently had that power outage over on the East Coast, and that was pretty bad. And last show, I mentioned a story about the slammer worm getting into a power station and actually filling their network so much with traffic from the slammer worm that it ended up shutting down a few systems. And, well, here's another thing.
Well, didn't we talk about that a couple of shows ago where, you know, it was, you know, we suggested that you could essentially shut down a country's power grid with the right amount of hacking?
I don't think we talked about that.
Oh, okay.
I think I discredited that, actually.
Okay, well, you know, somebody's proven me right.
But this article is basically saying how bad the systems are in the utilities industry.
Well, that's the easiest thing to blame, too.
For what?
Just any kind of problem. Oh, yeah, there was it whoever gave them a rating of, like, a B+. Oh, the whole U.S. infrastructure got a B+. Heck, there's countries in the world that, like, would get an F on that scale, too.
The CEO of the control system security firm Verano says that three issues have created a security nightmare for the power grid. Underinvestment in electric power distribution systems that include control software, the interconnection of power industry business systems with legacy control systems, and a trend among vendors to build control system technology on insecure platforms such as Microsoft. Underinvestment means that most utilities rely on aged systems that were never designed for the loads of security issues they face today. Legacy systems, for example, may have been designed to run on a private 10 megabit network and, as such, lack even basic security features such as firewalls. And I think that there's a person in here that's a vendor, and they're basically talking about how their operating system could be used to help lock things down. That's based on Linux. Basically, they're talking about using Linux and securing it and using it to run the control systems for the utility industry. And, you know, I guess a lot of companies are going to end up doing that that feel that Microsoft has been so much of a hassle for them, especially, you know, in the last year, maybe 3 years, all the problems that have been coming out for Microsoft. This is just another industry that's thinking about making the conversion over to Linux and staying away from products that simply are filled with holes at this moment. So that's a pretty interesting...
Yeah, I also like the idea that, you know, that Linux being kind of a user end created and really maintained system is really kind of socialist, which is really neat because it's this social community which creates and fixes, you know, things that they use. And here are the public utilities are kind of what we need to be, you know, need to kind of be socialized or regulated. And it's a really neat idea that having a Linux system, you know, helping to fix and make make the public utilities more usable, more secure, and more efficient. Just makes sense.
Yeah. So, I mean, even using, you know, Unix, you know, at this point is, you know, secure, more secure than Windows. Not talking about BSD. BSD is pretty secure, but talking about just things like Solaris, you know. I mean, that's that hasn't been the most secure operating system either, but it's nowhere near the virus capacity of a Microsoft system. So, you know, just more people making the switch. It's a very good thing. And the also I found looking up that there is a new supercomputer, and it's the fastest open source supercomputer in the United States, and it's 11.8 teraflops. It's developed by HP, and it's a supercomputer with Intel Itanium 2 processors running Linux and reaches full operations this last month, I believe. So that's pretty cool. I mean, anyone that says that Linux isn't a system that's ready for you know, intense computational use, which that was the saying a long time ago, saying that Linux wasn't a very mature operating system and had a lot to go before it was able to run mission-critical applications. And this one is definitely it. I mean, there's other systems out there that actually run Linux, but this is the fastest open-source system out there. And 11.8 terabits, or teraflops, is pretty fast. The fastest one I think I know of right now is the Earth Center, and that is 38 or 39 teraflops. That's trillion floating operations per second.
And that's a teraflop, is a trillion
operations per second.
Floating point calculations per second.
Yep.
That's amazing.
Yep. Every second.
That's mind-blowing.
Yeah, so, man, we put a lot of Linux propaganda out here. I don't know. I just like to carry the news stories and keep people up to date with, you know, stuff that's going on with Linux. And, you know, I'm also a big supporter, a big fan of BSD. Lately, you know, Linux has been in the limelight, so most of the info we get here is Linux-based. Even though, you know, I will put some information out. They will be coming out with OpenBSD 3.4 pretty soon, is what I heard. Which is another good operating system as well. It's not released under the GPL. They actually have their own BSD license, but it's open source. And I have a very interesting story here. We've never talked about stories that really included physical theft of a computing device. We've talked about security on other issues. We've talked about, you know, systems broken into, viruses, worms, all that good stuff. Spread the news about current events. And here's another current event that's pretty pretty amazing and could be terrorist-related. It's a lot of reading, but I think all of it's really relevant, so I'm just going to head straight through this whole story here. On the night of Wednesday, August 27th, two men dressed as computer technicians and carrying tool bags entered the Cargo Processing and Intelligence Center at Sydney International Airport. The men, described as being Pakistani Indian Arabic appearance, took a lift to the third floor of the Charles Ohm building in Link Road, next to the Customs Handling Depot and Qantas Jet Base. They presented themselves to the security desk as technicians sent by the Electronic Data Systems, the outsourced customs computer service provider which regularly sends people to work on computers after normal office hours. After supplying false names and signatures, they were given access to the top security mainframe room. They knew the room's location and no directions were needed. Inside, they spent 2 hours disconnecting two computers, which they put on trolleys and wheeled out of the room, past the security desk, into the lift and out of the building. The brazen theft has prompted Australia's top security agencies to conduct emergency damage audits amid fears that terrorists may have gained access to highly sensitive intelligence from the computers. The Australian Federal Police and ASIO, the two chief guardians against terrorism, fired off angry memos to customs officials demanding that they know the extent of which their top secret operations have been compromised. The Australian Customs Service had admitted that security blunder, but told customs officials in an email that no sensitive operational information was lost. This brought angry rebuttals from customs officers, who claimed that the two mainframe servers held thousands of confidential files, including top secret communications between customs investigators and AFP and ASIO. They point out the fact that all officers have been instructed to change passwords which give them access to the system, but a spokesman for the customs minister, Chris Ellison, said that this was a precautionary measure. Well, duh. The theft is being investigated by the AFP, which has conducted 65 counterterrorism operations against national groups in Australia and international terrorist groups such as Al-Qaeda and Jamaat Islama. Customs officials believe the thieves have inside information because they knew how to bypass security, how to identify themselves, and where to go, plus the fact that the mainframe room was regularly entered after hours for maintenance. The Community and Public Sector Union, which represents customs officials, had asked for guarantees that none of its members are at risk as a result of the theft. The union expressed fears that the lives of undercover agents could be jeopardized claimed that the customs officials were covering up the true extent of the damage. Also at risk, they said, are operations against terrorism and international drug cartels, in which customs officers watch the movements of suspects and suspicious cargo in and out of the country. They stressed that terrorism's had the most to gain by stealing the servers. The servers had no value except the information that they contained. Well, that's why they took it.
Yeah.
An officer said. They would have personal internal email accounts, probably passwords for those accounts, and any information harbored within them. Custom officers use the accounts to communicate volumes of sensitive operational material and intelligence to each other, including information from other agencies such as AFP and ASIO that would be at risk. The spokesman for Senator Ellison said, extensive testing of the system is being carried out to determine whether it has been compromised by the theft. No evidence has emerged to indicate that there has been. Okay. They have two computers in the labeled secret room.
Yeah.
And they're trying to downplay as much as possible.
No top secret information was lost. No confident. Nothing of any importance here.
We actually have
Don't look. There's no chickens being molested here today.
Yeah. You know, we have a security guard in front of the frickin' door. But there's, you know, it's probably okay. Just change your passwords. We'll fly right by. Man.
Yeah, especially if it has records of all that stuff. Yeah, I can definitely see why, like, undercover agents would be quaking in their boots right now.
Man, that is bad. That is bad.
Well, and that's just so brazen of a of an operation. Hi, you know, I'm here to fix your computer, and the security guard not even think that, wait a minute, they're taking out a computer. Where's that going?
You know, that right there should raise some flags. I mean, usually you don't take a computer out unless you're bringing a computer in.
Yeah.
You know?
Hey, here, let me go and take this one out, and then I'll bring you a new one. No.
Yeah, I mean, if you're taking a computer out, obviously the data is going on with it. They're not saying, like, okay, you know, we left the hard drives in there. We're going to take this box. We need to fix the motherboard. It works all together. We can't take it apart here. We need special... You know, that just doesn't fly. Yeah, it's just those people that are afraid to ask questions. You know, that security guard might have been intimidated and being like, well, it's a computer. I don't know. You know?
Yeah, or he doesn't even know enough to really know what he's guarding either. He could just be a, you know, minimum wage security guard. And he doesn't care. He just sits there and he reads a book or watches TV when no one's watching.
He was probably the guy that actually told them all the information on how to get in there.
I very could be. He didn't want to say that he gave them directions as well and held their hand.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, yeah, and that's the off switch over there.
Yeah, that's pretty ridiculous right there. Physical security, you know, just as important as anything else.
You know, once again, we see that the human, the human link can be the weakest one.
Which, yeah, Kevin Mitnick pointed that out pretty well with social engineering.
Yeah, that's mainly what that was, is that they held themselves with confidence and, you know, they knew the walk, you know, they talked the talk and walked the walk, that they didn't raise much question.
Oh yeah, you know, I said on the older In the Now show that I was going to do an article for BinRev.
Yeah, that you did.
Yeah. And, you know, I never ended up getting around to that article, and they released BinRev, the new one, version 1.2.
Slacker.
And, yeah, but I'm making up for it, and I'll tell you why in a minute.
All right. Let's see what your justification is today.
Yeah. I said I was going to do one, and for some reason I was thinking, oh, I don't really have the time to put all this together. I'm so busy, and I got all these projects I'm working on. Well, this morning I was, BinRev.com, if you don't know what I'm talking about. And I was doing this article this morning. I was thinking this morning about doing another article. I got this idea. I was like, oh, you know, I know how to do IP tables. And IP tables is basically a tool for firewalling and packet control on your Linux box. And I just got all this energy, and I decided to do it. And now I'm about up to 8 pages.
Wow.
And then,
are you sure you're not bipolar and you're in a manic phase and...
I don't know what it is, but it's there. And so that's going to be in BinRev 1.3. So if you're interested in that, along with other good reasons to check it out. Okay, so that is a promise. It's already
but
here.
But how long till, you know, BinRev 3 comes out?
Oh, man, it's another 4 months.
Oh, man, I'm going to have so many ulcers with anticipation and worry and fret.
Well, if you go out and read it before you read the article, I mean, study up on it, then, you know, you could take the initiative right now if you wanted to.
I don't have any initiative.
Yeah, yeah, so shut up.
All right, because I'm a bigger slacker than you are.
Hey, I can put Slackware Linux on your box.
Ooh, that could be fun.
Yeah.
Well, but then, you know, I'm worried because I can tell it to do something, and will it actually, like, do it instantaneously, or will it take 3 weeks to do it?
Depends on how you tell it, I guess.
Well, if it's Slackerware, that's...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, open file. I'll get to it when I get to it.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, we were talking about... I always wonder if the audience is able to follow along because we jumped to so many different stories. I mean, there's so much... You know, it's in the now, you know? We're talking about what's going on now, and it's such a... big range, you know.
Well, and then we only hit like this tiny little microcosm of what all is going on.
Well, we're on the technical end, yeah.
Yeah.
Even
in that is we're just kind of touching on the stuff that's kind of, you know, and
it's getting to the top of the,
yeah,
the cream of the crop stories.
And what's even being talked about or whatnot is there's all this probably research and development that's going on that, you know, we have no idea what's going on because no one's talking about it.
Well, what we talk about is known, or if you stay abreast to it, it's known to a certain community.
Yeah.
And what this show is about is hoping to reach people outside the community, and also, you know, the people that are in the community can enjoy, you know, hearing what's
about
going on
what
our feelings are on it. So, yeah, I mean, we do talk a lot about the same subjects. I mean, Linux, security, you know, which are huge things nowadays to talk about. Computing is always, you know, changing the world around us. So if it sounds to me, sometimes I feel like maybe I'm getting a little bit repetitive, but it is, you know, new content, same subject, and you know, it's just more details to fine tune your knowledge on what's going on.
You know what I was thinking about earlier today is, will there be ever a time in which most internet sites will be pay sites?
No way.
No?
No, there's too many people that want to put their own stuff on the web.
Well, because I'm thinking about, like, storage and all that, and when all the advertising, you know, kind of how everything was free for so long that, you know, they were paying for, you know, so many clicks per, you know, so many cents per click on, for, you know, links, that's all kind of died off, and that was a big money maker. And so I'm just kind of seeing if the next wave of advertising isn't going to be enough to pay for, like, free hosting sites. And
anything that's cool is going to turn into crap. I can guarantee you at some point in time, some portion of Linux or someone involved with it is going to take it and turn it into crap, and you're going to want to stay away from that portion. And it's going everything that's cool turns into crap.
Yeah. Well,
not ultimately, but some portion of it will.
Yeah.
So that's depressing. But it's not crap now, so I'm going to enjoy it.
Right on.
all right. You know, because you were mentioning Germany decided to go with SUSE Linux. I forget for which portion of, I think it was part of the government, instead of going with Microsoft. Well, Asia wants to write their own operating system because they're looking for alternatives to Microsoft, and it's going to be based on Linux. A plan by Japan, China, and South Korea to develop a operating system alternative to Microsoft Windows software could raise concerns over fair competition, Microsoft says.
Oh, wow. Now we hear this.
Poor guy.
Oh.
Japan, the world's second largest economy, made a proposal to the Asian Economic Summit this week, which was back in early September, which is a few days ago.
Yeah. We're really in the now.
We're totally in the now. This is old stuff, man. To build an inexpensive and trustworthy open source operating system that would be based on the system, on a system such as Linux, which could be copied and modified freely. We'd like to see the market decide who are the winners are in the software industry, said Tom Robertson, Microsoft's Tokyo-based director for government affairs in Asia. Microsoft prefers competition between software applications to be determined by the free markets rather than by government agencies. Government should not be in a position to decide who the winners are.
Hmm.
Oh, come on. Like, they haven't tried to do it themselves to dominate in other areas.
Yeah.
Just like every corporation that's selling a product is doing.
Well, and also, it's the country
worse.
That is wanting the product. They're the consumer. They're not trying to regulate it for everybody, are they?
No.
Yeah, so it's not a government agency going, you know, this is what, you know, our consumers in this country is going to use. It's, hey, this is what we want to use. We don't want to use Microsoft.
You know, another thing, too, is that just like the power grid, using it, because they're so sick of all the problems that are with it. Not to say that there can't be a problem with Linux and all that stuff, but we're looking at a track history here, and in the last few months, if that, I mean, the last few three years... You know, the record number of total compromise type of exploits and viruses and worms that have come out for Microsoft
completely outweighs anything else.
Yeah, wouldn't you want to move to something else? You're like, hey, look, the headache's here. We've been with these guys for a while. Let's try something else. So
yeah, it's kind of like, you know what, I'm going to go deer hunting, and I'm going to use my hunting cap that has antlers on it rather than the Dayglow orange one. you know, the one with the antlers has Microsoft, and the Dayglow orange one is Linux.
That's a very interesting comparison.
Well, thank you.
The Japanese media have reported that the government will spend 1 billion yen, which is 86 million, on the project to endorse the open source forum for Japan. Open source has taken over.
I think it's free market.
It's totally free market. And you know what? You'll find a lot of things are cheaper nowadays. Did you notice that?
No, about the only thing I buy is gas.
And Mountain Dew.
And cigarettes.
And Mountain Dew.
No, and much more Mountain Dew. I probably go through more Mountain Dew than I go through gas.
Do you drink that much Mountain Dew to reduce your sperm count?
I really should have a nil sperm count.
Just enough.
It's probably just one every 10 years.
Oh, man.
It's just, and it's probably really big, and it's super healthy. It's like a super freaking sperm.
Sweet.
If it can withstand all the Mountain Dew and toxins that are in my body.
All right.
And now that we're all thoroughly creeped out, including myself, on to the next article.
Yeah. Well, there isn't that much information out about the kid that was arrested for the Blaster B version, the Blaster variant B. But I just wanted to ask, what are your thoughts on that? You know what I'm talking about? There was a guy that was arrested, and he's I think he's 18, and basically he wrote a version of the Blaster Worm, but it was a small variant. He got his hands on the code and wrote in an extra few lines, and it was a little bit more malicious, and they say it hit about 7,000 computers that they know of, and they took him in.
I think under the the Millennium Digital Copyright Act, he's screwed.
Yeah, he's screwed.
Well, not only has he hacked something, he's stolen intellectual property.
Well, he didn't steal any property. It was just a worm that sent out, and it was malicious to its receiver.
Yeah, I'm being a little bit facetious there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the one
I
thing
know my humor is really dry.
It has been recently, I have to say.
It's like a martini.
Well, you've been busy, and actually, I'm extremely busy. I mean, I do the show every 2 weeks, and I love doing the show, but I'm a pretty busy guy.
Oh, I know. Well, this is about the only time we really touch base anymore, too. So, we get every once in a while.
Yeah. But basically, that kid was, he made a statement saying that, you know, I know that they're going to make an example of me and all sorts of stuff. I mean, the guy is 18 years old. He should have known what he was doing.
He's not even, you know, he didn't even figure out how to write a virus. He didn't, you know, figure out a new exploit or whatnot. He wasn't trying to, you know, kind of bully anybody into protecting their, you know, becoming more secure. Or, like,
I think probably he tried to see. I mean, I can't really speak for him, but maybe just try to, like, just add a little bit and be like, well, let me see if this works. But didn't even, he just wanted to see if it worked. Maybe he didn't even think of the consequences beyond that. And then now he's like, oh, man, you know?
Well, then, in that way, I'm glad that he'll probably become a felon and he won't be able to own a handgun. Because if he can't think that far, I don't want him owning a gun.
Oh, man.
Or driving a car, for that matter, because, yeah, he'd probably run me off the road.
Yeah, but I mean, come on, when you're 18, did you do everything right?
Well, it was pretty squeaky clean that year.
No, nobody does everything right, and everyone matures, and some people are more mature than others. I don't know. I don't know what that's gonna be like for him, what's going to happen next, or if they ever release any information, but definitely we'll follow that story here.
Yeah, I can empathize with it, but at the same time, there's a lot of, like, fundamentals that are just kind of not right there. Like, he took something, kind of improved upon it and made it even more malicious. Well, what's the point of being malicious with a virus? What's the point?
I think it's pretty stupid. I mean, why would you want to damage somebody else's computer?
That's right. It's like being, you know, you're going out to even more violently violate more people. And so, you know, I just have a hard time with it.
All right.
But it seems to be a factor of life.
Let's see. Man, we're already pretty far into it, but we have quite a few more stories. Well, here's another interesting thing. I heard something about this in the past, that this technology was going to be developed. But basically, this company called Nippon Telegraph and Telephone Corp., NTT, they've developed a diamond semiconductor device that operates at 81 gigahertz frequency.
Wow.
More than twice the speed of earlier devices. The advance promises that they can make the application in the millimeter wave band from 30 to 300 gigahertz possible for the first time. Basically, the diamond is expected to be the next generation semiconductor material based on its high thermal conductivity, high breakdown voltage, and high carrier mobility. Together, these characteristics make diamond semiconductors more suitable for high-frequency, high-power devices. But diamond semiconductors are prone to defects and impurities that have hindered development of prototype devices with performances close to the expected theoretical performance of a diamond semiconductor device. The joint team formed a T-shaped gate at the diamond layer, which is on the 3-millimeter diamond substrate. The gate width, that which determines the performance of the device, is 0.2 micron. Typically, processors now are on the 0.18 micron press. The device operated continuously at 81 gigahertz.
Well, now, is that actually like a diamond, as in just the carbon structure, that it's all, you know, it's a C ionically bonded with another, well, a carbon ionically bonded with another carbon? Does it mention anything like that?
No, it doesn't. You know, honestly, I don't know much about it, but...
But theoretically, I could really see that it would be... It would have immense capabilities of handling, you know, power and all that. It has high everything.
What I'm curious is, how do they run electricity over it?
Well, it's still got a... Well, it's ionically bonded, so it still has a free electron in one of the outer, I want to say, P electron shells, but that's been... quite a few years, but it should still have it free because it's an ionic bond. And if anybody can, you know, want to correct me, please, you can
please do it now.
Yeah,
no. I mean, no, you're trying. See the and I don't really know myself, but I mean, I can understand the conductivity and stuff like that, and it's going to be a great. I don't understand the conductivity, but I do understand the heat is what I mean. And, you know, using lasers and diamonds, you can really cut things really easily within the diamond, you know. And, you know, it says right here that they formed a gate, which, you know, on and off on the T-gate, and they're able to switch information. I don't know, pretty amazing. I mean, stuff to come. I mean, we've talked about nanotechnology and stuff like that. It's all going to come, you know, 50, 70 years, whatever it takes, but it's going to be there. And, I don't know. You know, as I grow up, maybe I'm one of those people. I guess it's like I enjoyed all the things that I remember, you know, from my teens or before. You know, anything and anything else, I'm like, ah, it's crap. Ah, it's not like that. It's crap, you know?
But you're already over 30.
I'm not over 30.
No, I know you're not. But that's... I was thinking about that a while back. Is the reason why you don't trust anybody who's over 30. Or so though. The old 60s saying went, is that that's about the time where you stop thinking, you stop growing, stop embracing what's new.
Well, I guess mine is I totally embrace things that are new, and I'm always doing new things, and and I'm always trying to figure out new things and talk to people and the whole spectrum of the world. And I really enjoy that. What I'm saying is that, like, maybe there's a specific thing that I really had a feeling for. Maybe it's a, you know, movies or
when things were fresher and newer and
yeah,
like your first car is just, no matter if it hardly ran or, you know, you would have to work on it for 2 weeks to pass emissions, that was the greatest car because you had all these stories for it and you had so much meaning invoked in it that it was, you know, the first day you were just starting to figure out the world and this is how, like, cars were. It became the idea of the time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's just some of the things that, you know, talking about sometimes the Microsoft Linux battle and all that stuff, sometimes I'm just like, forget it, you know? I don't even want to use a computer anymore. You know what I mean? I'm sick of hearing about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, you know, I just want something that you just use and you enjoy. You know, the only time I really hear about that kind of stuff is when I'm, you know, researching for the show. But, and, you know, talk about in the show, you know, we say that a lot. And I'm like, man, forget it. I don't want to talk about it anymore. And it's because, you know, I just want to go back to when you didn't have all this crap, you know, and you're just using it and you're talking about it and you're sharing it. And you can still do that now. You can still do that now. But sometimes, you know, that other stuff gets a little...
Yeah, it's a little unpleasant. It brings it down. It's kind of a bummer.
It's a bummer. That's why that word was made.
Exactly.
It was a bummer. So, you know,
because it's all this like negative stuff that just kind of bumps along with all your good happy pleasure of using and creating and
yeah. And then, you know, the more you think about it and the more you build it up and the more you talk about it or whatever, you're like, you know, you got this pattern with, you know, something you enjoy, but this pattern still keeps happening and growing, and you're like, and it's only growing in your head because you keep thinking about it. If you don't go around it and stuff like that, then you're not going to care anyways. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people out there are like that.
And then even if you...
But then I wouldn't be bringing the news, so...
Yeah, all right.
Well, I got on the tangent because, you know, when they've got 81 gigahertz, you know, things out there in the future or whatever, who knows, you know? Who knows how... You know, the more powerful technology gets, the less power we have.
Yeah, that's what's kind of scary.
Yeah, so, you know, you're like, hey, that's a benefit. It's one less thing I don't have to do, or I can't do, and I'll let somebody else, you know, or something else do it. And, you know, that's...
Well, we see that in our economy. Is like, the U.S. will probably never be a manufacturing country again. The reason being is we have enough...
Or a marketing country.
Enough knowledge and enough capabilities that if anybody wanted to produce something here, well, it's in the long run, it's going to be cheaper and more efficient to automate it, unless it's something that is creative. You know, we're getting into the service industry, you know, and that's a little foreshadowing there. Now we've kind of gone to a service industry and an information industry. And pretty soon, most of that, you know, by, like, automated phone systems are going to be able to take care of most of that. You know, like, service things, except, you know, and even food. You know, like, McDonald's is trying to work on a little kiosk store, which is completely, or mostly automated. Or even the, you know, the burgers come out of the freezer on a little conveyor belt, and they're fried, and a little assembly of the Big Mac.
We're going to lose our values, you know.
Well, I think that we're going to become to a point where it's either you do something that's absolutely unique and creative, or you can't do anything at all. The reason being is there's going to be nothing left. But what do we do as people? What is the only thing that machines cannot yet do better than us? And that is think creatively.
Have you seen the fractal generators?
I've seen a lot of fractals.
Pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, and that's...
But they're programmed to do that.
Exactly. It took the human mind to come up with a fractal in the first place.
Definitely. I want to say something positive.
So do I.
Okay, something positive. Come on, it can't be this hard.
Yeah. You know, Mars looks really cool right now.
It does. And actually, you know, something positive, non-technical related. That isn't technical related.
It depends, because it's as close as it's been in like 60,000 years.
Well, that's not technical. That's just, it's there.
That's, well,
that's nature.
Statistical. Yeah, but also, different kind of technical, that there's quite a few hypotheses that Mars actually created the last, well, caused the last ice ages because it, before its orbit settled down into its little cycle, that it would come even closer than it is now and kind of pull out the Earth. Goes, we're just coming out just a little bit, and now we're going to cool off.
Did you go down like we watched for the moon and the eclipse? Did you go down the Science Center and watch?
Yeah, I did.
And you didn't call me?
Well, actually, I did it the other night.
Oh.
I didn't do it on the 27th, which was it, Because I didn't
know. It was cloudy out then.
Yeah, I kind of like went outside, looked, and was like, wow, that's cloudy.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to try to find a telescope today. Because I thought about driving to one of the observatories, and then I was like, you know what? There's going to be such an immense line there, because if I'm driving, you know, 150 miles to go to an observatory, imagine how many other hundreds of people are doing the same thing, and they don't even have to drive the 150 miles. They just drive 20 minutes down there.
Yeah. You know, the some positive. You know what? Was I going to play it with you? I didn't know if you knew about it, but we're gonna go camping next month or so.
Yeah, I think I agreed to it.
Okay. Yeah, and I think there's a few other people that might go camping too. I don't know how big. Probably not too big. I wouldn't say any more than four people. Camping, dude. That's where it's at. That is the best.
Getting back to nature and, like, you know, the primal self that's getting out and, you know, having to eat what you kill and catch or whatever.
No, I bring canned foods.
Yeah, I just eat the freaking grass and twigs. As in the immortal words of Yul Gibbons, do you know how many parts of a pine tree are actually edible? Of course, he died from food poisoning because that man ate everything.
Oh. Well, yeah. Okay. Well, we're off.
Well, let me go. Just one little thing. I was in Telluride for the Mushroom Festival. It's the 25th annual Mushroom Festival.
They just have Burning Man also.
Yeah, I know. I was trying to go for a little jaunt over there, but I couldn't make it that far.
Somebody died.
No.
Yeah, one person died.
Wow.
I think it was an accident with fire, I think.
Oh. Well, I think that's the first person who died in Burning Man.
I think it is.
That's really sad. That's probably going to hinder their next year's attendance.
No.
It'll probably even be more. Because I'll probably make sure I try to go. But I was really proud of the whole Mushroom Festival. They talked a lot about psychedelic mushrooms or psychotropic ones.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, no one's going to talk about normal mushrooms. I mean, it's boring.
Well, just the immense, like, science or the methodology of classification and identification of fungi is amazing. And then, you know, they're just these minute details. They go from one that's, you know, like a choice edible mushroom to one that's really toxic. And these people go out there and they run around and they pick up all these mushrooms and eat them. It's kind of this weird Russian roulette of, you know, gastronomical edification.
Hmm.
I was quite amazed by it.
I can't really follow, but...
No?
No. But, I mean, you know, I don't know, yeah. Somebody out there is probably excited about that.
Yeah, all right.
Well,
to get really to the point where it's your mind and your ability to classify and identify something that if you get it wrong, it might kill you. Or if you get it right, it'll be really tasty.
How about the no, where you just don't even touch it and stay away?
Yeah, that's the group that I'm in.
Okay. you just watch those people.
Yeah, because it's just like this, well, did he get it right? Is he going to, like, start convulsing now? Or is he going to, like, belch in gastrointestinal bliss?
Okay. Well, moving on to a little bit of SCO news now. And it's getting smaller, which I'm happy because, you know, I'm getting sick of reporting it, actually.
I've been sick of hearing it.
Yeah, yeah. All right, we'll go through it really. We'll go through it pretty fast.
All right.
Go through it pretty fast. Basically, now they're invoicing commercial users of Linux, claiming the money is owed to them due to their code being it.
Oh, yeah, even though that hasn't been ruled.
It hasn't even been proved yet.
No.
But they're sending out invoices, so...
So all you people getting invoices, don't pay it.
And here is the top 10 list of what to do with those invoices.
Ooh, a top 10 list.
This is In-N-Out's first top 10 list.
Top 10 list, top 10 list. Everybody loves the top 10 list.
Too bad I don't have a drum roll.
Sorry, that was really bad.
Yeah. But that's all right. The first one is collect as many copies of the invoice as you can and then use them to protest intellectual piracy with a burn the skull burn bonfire.
Ooh.
Take several copies together to make a Dara liner to use on the button of your birdcage or kitty litter pan, or use it to clean fish on.
Ooh, yes, that's a... I could definitely see that that would be a prudent use.
Make copies of the invoice and use them as invitations to your next Linux Users Group event.
I like that one. That's also recycling and reusing. Except that you had to make new copies just to do that with.
Or just right in the back, maybe?
Well, you'd have to make copies
of
the invoice.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. All right.
No, but you know, if I don't have a problem with that.
Frame a copy of the invoice and put it in a time capsule as a relic from the dark ages of IP.
Ooh, because maybe by the time in 100 years, they might have ruled that there's actually code there.
In Mexico.
Yeah.
Send a copy of the invoice to Microsoft and ask them to pay it since they don't support SCO's policies. Oh, since they support SCO's IP policies and you don't.
Yeah, I think, yeah, putting the penalty where penalty is due.
Forward a copy of the invoice to your state attorney general along with a letter requesting an investigation of the SCO group for fraud and or extortion. Explain in your letter that you are being invoiced for something which is both unsubstantiated and disputed.
And I would add on to a civil case if that caused you a mental and emotional distress for having an invoice that you couldn't, you know, ethically or morally pay.
I've got a headache right now.
I think.
Forward a copy of the invoice to the United States Postal Service along with a similar letter suggesting an investigation for mail fraud.
Ooh, there we go.
Forward a copy of the invoice with a letter to all of your elected state and federal lawmakers explaining how it demonstrates that the entire body of intellectual property law needs rethinking in order to bring back in the line with its original intent. Instead of fostering creativity and common welfare, it's become a negative force which stifles innovation and provides only for corporate welfare.
Hallelujah, brother. Say it again.
Forward a copy. Send SCO a registered letter demanding proof of their claims. Tell them unsubstantiated claims based on evidence like the code snippets they recently showed in Las Vegas do not suffice, and that if such proof is not forthcoming, you will report them to the appropriate law enforcement agency.
And send them an invoice for the mailing, postage, and handling fees.
Yeah. Obtain a quote for legal research of the invoice and send SCO a bill for that amount, explaining that it was as prudent, responsible businessmen, you cannot pay an invoice unless you are certain of its validity.
Okay.
If you live in the Bay Area, consider subscribing to a new low traffic announcement on mailing list of the group called the Bay Area Software Professionals. For responsibility and accountability, they will keep you informed as to local actions responses to SCO's invoice. If you live elsewhere, organize or get involved with a local group with similar concerns.
That's the way to do it.
I think
civil disobedience rules.
It does at times, yeah. It cleans the slate.
Well, I was thinking about that. Is like one of the justifications of, you know, Jesus being the Son of God is because he did this great, you know, social and economic and political change in the Middle East. Well, you know what? Gandhi did the same thing, but no one's making him a god.
I worship Gandhi, man.
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, because we're moving along. We're doing a chipper SCO section.
Yeah. We're having fun.
The SCO attacks SGI now, possibly. SGI says its conversion of XFS into the open source program is permitted. We believe our release of XFS as open source to Linux was consistent with our Unix contract with SCO. SGI basically said that. And SGI originally wrote XFS for its Unix servers, which run the IRIX version of the operating system that originally was developed at AT&T. In 1999, SGI declared it would release an open source XFS version for Linux as part of a plan to embrace the new operating system.
Hmm. That's kind of nifty.
Yeah.
But it kind of sounds like this whole thing is like SCO is not wanting to, was kind of afraid itself to be innovative and try new things. So it's just going after everybody because somebody stole their idea.
Yeah, I think at the first part it was probably they wanted to get bought out because they're going nowhere.
Yeah.
And now it turns out that no one's going to be doing anything with them, and they're just Microsoft's bitch. And, you know, they've actually put themselves in their own dilemma. So now, like, we'll just go all out, see how many people will give us licensing fees, and who knows.
Yeah, we'll take that money and run.
Yeah, we'll just take a ride with it.
That's a corporate CEO bonus right there.
I'll talk about that a little bit later.
Oh, another transition that I didn't even know about.
Dun, 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 dun.
Wow, I'm on the ball tonight.
Man. And, kind of a funny thing. It says, in June, SCO Senior Vice President Chris Sontag was quoted as saying the company will file a new suit or amend a lawsuit against IBM to target other companies which SCO alleges are illegally appropriating its Unix source code. Today, meaning August 29th, SCO had said that they had no current plans to take a commercial Linux customer to court. These guys just can't get their facts straight.
Yeah, they don't know where they're going.
And
so if you want to pay the invoice, that's great. And if you don't, they're not going to do anything about it.
Send them your own invoice. You know, just be just as wild.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
I'm just going to start sending companies my own invoice and services that I didn't render.
You're like, look, you know, I went to go read the news, and I was typically going to get my good news, but then I saw yours, and you prohibited me from seeing the good news. I think you owe me $5. Send that to me now.
I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, for some reason, SCO was something that your mother used to call you when you were a child, and it really damaged you for some reason. And you keep hearing it more often now, and you can't seem to get away from it, no matter how hard you try, because you listen to the In and Out show, and you're checking out the news and stuff like that, and here's SCO, and you're now mentally damaged, and you need some dough, because...
because now you're agoraphobic.
Yeah. And when they ask you to prove it, tell them, I don't know.
I don't leave the house. So there.
And
when I do, I wash myself a lot.
Yeah. This is a big thing to talk about. You could actually spend a lot of time on it, but we're gonna stay chipper and we're going to skim over it. I hate the word chipper. We're going to stay...
Upbeat.
And basically, this is SCO...
Cereal. Grooving.
Feeling fine.
Right on.
Because SCO is going to be one of the first people possibly to be, you know, actually having GPL challenged in court. Because they did release their software, Linux, their version of Linux, under the GPL license. Even though they say they didn't, it's there. They did. And they're going to say, oh, no. Our copyright supersedes that. That's going to be an interesting debate. Hopefully there's no damage to GPL. I don't think there is. I think it's sound in my opinion. You get this piece of software. It says that this is what the license is for it. It's very clear. It doesn't take an encyclopedia worth of books to explain it. And so.
Yeah, I think that's pretty self-evident.
Pretty self-evident. And very interesting. I've got this information right here about SCO. And... it is CEOs and different employees selling their stock, starting from 6/20/2003. Let me just read what the vice presidents, some of them were employees and other top people, but we're going to read how many times the senior vice president sold his stock. He sold 5,000 shares on June 20th. That is about $55,000. He then sold another 5,000 on the 25th. That's $50,000. He sold 5,000 again on July 8th. That was $55,000. The chief financial officer, he sold 7,000 in the month of July. Vice president again selling 5,000 shares in July, another 5,000 shares in July, another 8,000 shares, 6,000 shares, 6,000, 6,000, 6,000, and...
Wait, isn't it about... That's just a little while after all this stuff started, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, totally.
And so that would actually kind of say inside trader?
Well, it's their own company. Yeah, they can move their own stock. Another vice president.
Well, that's true. They waited until after they did this to sell off all their stock. If they sold off all their stock and then started this ball rolling, there'd be a little bit of ethical.
Let's see, 20,000, which was senior vice president, precedes our estimate of 261,000. 5,000 again, 5,000 again, 5,000 again. And flip to the next page here. Going back, 5,000, 5,000, 5,000, 5,000. You know, at 5,000 shares now, we said 51,000, I believe it was, 51 or 55,000.
Yeah.
Now it's 73,000 because they've gotten a little bit of money out of spreading their propaganda everywhere.
Huh.
So that's a lot of stock being sold by them. So obviously it's more crap.
Yeah, I think it's all just smoke and mirrors.
So I think they're in the middle of the smoke and mirrors, and they're firing up a strobe light, like, "Ha! Let's see how many losers, you know, listen to our invoice."
Yeah.
So, do not respond to that. It's ridiculous. It's unproven. It's ridiculous.
Unsubstantiated.
All right. Well, that is September 7th in the Now Show. September 7th. Oh, my gosh. We're right next to September 11th.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's... All right, we can have a future moment in silence, or we can wait until the next one.
That was a moment of silence, right?
There we go. All right. No, that wasn't very respectful, though.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you don't see me jumping to a new subject right now, do you?
No, because I think we're kind of, because I'm thinking about it. It's not a very happy thought.
So, all right, well, I don't want to end on that. I don't want to end on that at all. All
right, let's...
oh, man. Okay, well, that was the September 7th of the edition of the In and Out Show. And we'll be back again in 2 weeks with more information, more current events, and try to bring as much creative thinking as possible in each episode, and we'll be bringing some more again.
And I challenge you all to use your own aluminum can and some wire and see if you can make your own self a Robo Strider.
Or a directional can antenna.
Oh, that's also really nifty.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can just plug that into your laptop or...
Rusty's got two of them. Pretty cool stuff. All right. Well, we will see everyone in 2 weeks. This is Slip Mode signing out.
And this is VR signing off.